It's Elise here, and I am back with another episode. So I have two awesome stories for you today. First, I'll be telling you about the famous Caribou Hotel in the Yukon. Its most notable spirit, Mrs. Gideon, was featured on a stamp. So much like the Haunted Bride at the Banff Springs Hotel and also the St. Louis Ghost Train Lights, Mrs. Gideon was also featured in the Haunted Canada stamp and coin, I believe. Finally, I'll be talking about the very mysterious Nahanni Valley in the Northwest Territories. I'd like to take a second here to say a big thank you to Anne from the Caribou Hotel. She's so lovely and I really enjoyed speaking with her. She and her partner Jamie have been working really hard on this hotel and are hoping that it will open fully in 2021. So you know the drill. If you're listening again, thank you so much. And if you're a new listener, welcome. So without further ado, let's get into this episode. The first location I'm going to talk about is the Caribou Hotel in Carcross, which is located actually not too far north of the British Columbia border in the Yukon. This location is one of the most famous haunted locations in Canada. Its resident ghost was actually further immortalized, as I said in the intro, on a stamp just a couple of years ago. So the hotel's history is a long and colorful one. It began as the Yukon Hotel, built in approximately 1898 in Bennett, BC. Bennett was a gold rush town that, like most of its kind, were short-lived. When the railroad came in around 1901, the community dried up and became yet another gold rush ghost town. Not wanting to see the hotel go to waste, it was loaded up and moved down river. So that would have been a sight to see. The hotel made its way to Carcross and was sold to Dawson Charley. Dawson Charley is believed to be one of the co-discoverers of the Klondike Gold Rush. From his discovery, he was a very wealthy man. He bought the Yukon for $9,000 and he did extensive remodels on the hotel. He passed away in 1908, and at that time, Edwin and Bessie Gideon stepped in and leased the hotel from Dawson's estate. Bad luck would strike a short time later when the hotel would burn to the ground in 1909. Some articles say that it was Christmas Eve, but I'm not 100% sure. When I spoke with Anne, one of the current owners, she was telling me about some of the original hotel pieces that they have in the hotel. She said that when the fire began, it was upstairs. So Edwin and Bessie had time to throw things out into the snow from the first floor windows. Two items that Anne is really proud to have are a piano and a large round table. Anne says that when they were digging out the basement, they actually found remnants of that fire still. She said they found melted glass from the original hotel windows, the original stove, and they found many bottles from way back when. They have little display areas around the hotel of some of the old antiques and even some of the bottles that they found. Some other things of note that were found was a champagne bottle, pill bottle, and a bottle of whiskey from all that time ago. She said that the bottle is on display right now. Anne's excitement about these little pieces of the past made me feel a kindred bond with her, and I actually told her about the windows of the past in the Bailey Theater from season one. It's really nice to hear that great minds think alike. Back to 1910. After the fire, the Gideons had to make a choice. Would they abandon the hotel lease or would they attempt to rebuild? Well, thankfully, the Gideons chose to rebuild, and with financing, that's exactly what they did. I feel like it was with the Gideons and the resurrected Caribou Hotel that it really came alive. It became a staple in the Yukon and definitely put Carcross on the map. It was a really nice hotel, and there were many well-to-do people that graced the halls and rooms over the years. They also had many, many regulars who would visit yearly and became friends with the Gideons. Captain James Alexander and his wife would visit many times when they would head off for their winter vacations. They would often leave their beloved parrot, Polly, under the care of Mr. and Mrs. Gideon. There was nothing different in 1918 when they came and left Polly at the Caribou. But sadly, the Alexanders took an ill-fated voyage on the SS Princess Sophia, which ran aground on the Vanderbilt Reef near Alaska on October 25th, killing everyone on board. Over 360 souls lost. The only survivor, supposedly, was the Alexander's dog. After the tragic incident, the Gideons kept Polly, who became a mascot of the hotel. Many enjoyed the fact that he would entertain patrons by singing, he would eat booze-soaked crackers, and he would swear like a sailor. Bessie tried to reform Polly of his swearing by teaching him Bible songs. He didn't stop swearing, but he did sing those sweet songs. Polly was also known for biting people as well. And Polly actually outlived both of the Gideons and passed at around 100 years old in the 1970s. When Polly would sleep, he would sleep at the bottom of his cage with his legs in the air, and he would have to be poked awake. So people who didn't know this little quirk would assume that he was dead. One day, it seems, though, he didn't wake up. There was a huge memorial for Polly, and people from all around came to pay their respects, and they even had a burial for him. Another well-known patron to the Caribou was a man named Johnny Johns. He was a Carcross Tagish First Nations man who was rated as one of the top 10 game outfitters in the world. He began his big game outfitting company in 1917 at the age of 19. He was the first Yukon First Nations person to get his chief's license in 1926. He guided groups during the construction of the Alaskan Highway, and Anne told me that Johnny Johns loved the Caribou, and he would bring in so many tourists into the Yukon, but also to the Caribou Hotel specifically. He was personally invited by Prime Minister Trudeau, Sr., to the Caribou for an event in 1968 and 1977. Johnny also knew Polly quite well, and when Polly passed away, Johnny would have never missed it. He arrived and apparently sang one of Polly's favorite songs. Johnny had an amazing life and passed away in 1988, and Anne said she really wished she could have met him. So back to the Gideons, Edwin and Bessie both passed away in the hotel. Edwin on October 27th, 1925, and Bessie on October 27th, 1933, exactly 8 years apart. I saw some articles that have said that Bessie's gravesite could not be found, but I did find it through one of my favorite sites, findgrave.com. In the Carcross Cemetery, the grave plaques for both Edwin and Bessie are there, so I'm not sure what that sort of article is all about and why that was stated. But no matter the mix-up, it's crazy that they died on the same day and so close to Halloween. Bessie obviously had no intention of moving on, and being that the hotel standing now was built by the Gideons in 1910, she clearly has a connection to the place, and she is said to still be quite active in the hotel. There were many more owners over the years, and in 2004, owner Bob Olson was tragically murdered in the hotel. Two men went on a drinking binge and they robbed and beat Bob, throwing him in a nearby creek. The two men were charged with the murder in 2006. Such a tragic event to happen there. The next and current owners came to purchase the hotel in 2006. Anne and her partner Jamie love history and loved the history and scenery of Carcross. Anne has always been a lover of antiques and dreamed of opening a bed and breakfast. Jamie is a building contractor, so was willing and definitely able to do the work that they might need. They fell in love with the Caribou Hotel, and at the time of purchase, they had no idea of the supposed haunting. Once they began to learn about the hotel and its history, there was no question that they wanted to include as much of the past into the reconstruction as they could. And when I say reconstruction, I mean complete reconstruction. And they had to make sure to do things in a specific way, as the hotel was dedicated as a Yukon Heritage Site in 2008. Just this year, in 2019, when I interviewed her, the hotel opened its first area, so the couple unveiled the Surly Bird Saloon. I'll add some photos up on the blog. It looks incredibly beautiful, and I love that they paid homage to Polly. The next part of the hotel slated to open is the restaurant. The rooms in the upper floors should be ready by 2021. I've already been discussing a trip with my husband, so I really want to see this hotel in person. It looks amazing. So now let's get into the stories from this stunning place. Anne told me, firstly, that the previous owners had closed the third floor for some reason. They weren't clear why. A lot of people have shared stories and strange photos and experiences from up there. The second floor is where the owner's room is, where Bessie would have lived, and it's in that room that many things also happen, and where Bessie has even been seen. One thing you should know is that Jamie is a skeptic, and Anne is a believer. So Anne said that one night, Jamie was working late in the hotel, and he called her. He was working on the second floor, getting ready for drywall, and he was standing on the landing of the staircase when he felt someone run up the stairs beside him. He turned, but no one was there. We talked about the renovation, and I asked her if she felt like the construction drummed up activity, and she said, for a while, yes. And at first they would hear hammering sounds in other places in the building. When construction was going on in the saloon, there were holes in the floor for piping and venting. And if you looked through the holes, you could see the newly poured concrete floors in the basement. One day there were three workers in there. It was winter, so the doors were locked up. And one worker suddenly stood up, dropped his tool belt, and announced, I'm out of here. He left and the other two workers caught up with him to see what the heck was going on. He told them that he saw someone in the basement. He glanced down one of the holes and saw a man walk into view and look directly at him. He saw his face in immense detail. He said that he was a bald man. Anne said that this man is still terrified about what he saw that day and refuses to come back in. When Anne and Jamie first purchased the hotel, the building had no power. When Anne and Jamie had first purchased the hotel, the building had no power. So obviously it was quite strange when people in town would walk past the hotel at night and would later comment that they saw the lights on and could see someone in the upper floors. These were at times where Anne and Jamie knew there was no one in there, and they would let these people know that not only was the building empty, there was no electricity. The main person that people see and seem to interact with is Bessie Gideon. People have seen her in the upper windows, and some have even seen her with a bird on her shoulder. Anne told me of a time that she and one of her friends decided to go to the hotel on October 27th to see if anything would happen. They didn't have lights installed on the second floor yet, so they brought a blanket, their dogs, some wine, and set up camp in the saloon where they could have lights on. After a while, they decided to go up on the second floor where the owner's room is. And Anne said, I'll just turn on one of the construction lights. They got to the second floor, however, and Anne couldn't find the light. So they decided to take a photo with flash. Anne tried to take a photo, and the flash would come on, but the photo would not take. She tried a few times, but it wouldn't work. So her friend tried with her phone. It worked, and the photo was a nice, clear photo of the hallway. They decided to take a selfie, so they turned the camera around, but all they saw on the screen was staticky white. They took a photo anyway, and it turned out just fine. The camera was flipped back to the hallway, and they took another photo. And as they were looking through the camera, they could see that there were spots and flecks floating across the screen. They took another image, and the spots looked as though they were converging in one area. Anne described it as looking like it was forming a figure. So she sent me these two photos, by the way, so I will have them up on the blog. It's definitely strange. Of course, there are many theories on orbs and whether or not they are actually something or whether it's dust. And of course, it's a construction site. But it is kind of odd because she's right. You look at these photos and it definitely looks like these spots are gathering together in the second photo. And I also will point out, I had some technical difficulties with these photos. The second photo where the spots look like they're forming a figure would not open, would not download, and it was very strange. I've never had that happen before. And Anne had to actually resend them, and eventually it did work for me, but you know, who knows? Maybe it's nothing, but it was kind of strange. Anne says that once they left, both of their phones worked just fine. One time, Bessie Gideon's descendant, one of her grandnieces, had come to visit. Her dad had lived in the hotel for a time, so she had come to see where her dad had grown up. Anne led her on a tour, and this was just after the Haunted Canada stamp celebration. So they had actually nailed up some plywood to block the stairs. So Anne went to grab a ladder so she could take it down so they could go upstairs and look in the owner's suite. While Anne was out of the room, the woman called up the stairs to introduce herself to her ancestor, and in response, she heard three clear bangs coming from upstairs where the owner's suite is. When Anne came back with the ladder, she noticed the woman looked really freaked out. She told Anne what happened, and she said, "I don't want to go up there." And she didn't. She actually ended up leaving. Another great story that Anne told me was from a previous owner. He had run the hotel on a lease for a couple of years, and he was living in the owner's suite. Everything was locked up, and at about 2 or 3 in the morning, he groggily woke up, and there was a woman standing at the end of his bed. She had a watch on, and her hair was up in a bun. She was wearing heavy clothing, and he said, "Agnes, why are you here? Why aren't you home?" She didn't say anything to him. He got up, and he put his coat on. He followed her out of his room, and then he turned and went back to bed. In the morning, when he opened the bar, one of his locals came in and he said, "What was your mom doing in the hotel last night?" Johnny Johns was supposedly there as well, and he jumped in and said, "Agnes is in Stewart Crossing, which is about 4.5 hours away from Carcross." Johnny Johns, hearing the description of the woman, said, "That was Bessie Gideon." It was then that the owner realized, in his half-asleep state, he hadn't actually heard any footfalls or any doors opening. That would have been enough to cut my lease short. I'm just going to say, absolutely would not have wanted to stay there again. So like I said, the hotel is hopefully going to be open in 2021. I'll keep you all posted. I know with everything going on, these deadlines might be pushed now. But I know I can't wait to see what this place is going to look like. Anne and Jamie have been working their butts off, and I think it's going to be incredible. Anne really wants to pay tribute to the past and to make the community proud of the Caribou Hotel. I think it will be really busy on October 27th with people hoping to be visited by Bessie Gideon. The next location I'm going to talk about is Nahanni Valley in the Northwest Territories. Canada is a massive country, and there are huge portions that are natural and even completely unexplored. Nahanni Valley, or Nahanni National Park, is part of the Mackenzie Mountain region. It's far north, and part of its mystery is a lush tropical paradise in the middle of the frozen landscape. Filled with lush tropical plants, the air is warm, ferns and wild cherries and beautiful roses grow. This itself is such a strange sight that would no doubt have thrown an explorer for a loop back in the Klondike days. This part of Nahanni Valley is easily explained, as there are a number of hot springs in the area that make this seemingly strange landscape an anomaly. There are massive canyons, gorges, and stunning forests, geysers, sinkholes, and stunning waterfalls, including Virginia Falls. This is twice the size of Niagara Falls and a beautiful sight to see. The park is roughly 11,000 miles and a World Heritage Site. The park is only accessible by boat or plane, and to explore many parts of the park, you need special permissions. Now, this could be, of course, an effort to protect the park, or it might be for the protection of the people going into the park who may never be seen again. Something I haven't revealed about this location is that it's known by other names: Deadman Valley, Headless Creek, the Valley of Headless Men, and Funeral Range, among other variations. This is because there were a number of mysterious beheadings in the early 1900s, as well as up to 44 people who have vanished in the valley by 1969. There have also been sightings of UFOs, and it appears to be a hotbed for strange creatures, and is even the site of a cave known as the Gallery of Lost Sheep. It was discovered full of the bodies of around 100 ancient sheep, believed to be from around 2500 BC. That is terrifying. So let's go back a little bit. It's believed that Nahanni Valley has been inhabited from about 9 to 10,000 years ago. It's been said that many tribes were afraid to settle here, and they believed it to be an evil place. They believed it to be haunted by spirits and devils. The Dene people, who have been in the area for thousands of years, have told of strange creatures lurking in the forest. They also share the tales of a tribe who once lived in the mountains and seemingly disappeared without a trace. The tribe was known as the Naha, and it's said that they were larger than normal men. They had powerful weapons that had never been seen before, and they wore masks and armor that frightened anyone who came into contact with them. They were also known for beheading their victims. When European settlers came to the area in the 1700s, they believed that the valley would hold cache of riches, and thus brought a mass of miners into the area, all looking for gold. There were stories, of course, that fueled the miners with a hunger for the riches that they'd always dreamt of. It was in this era that the creepy legends they had heard whispers of came screaming to the forefront. Two brothers, Willie and Frank McLeod, came to the area with gold in their eyes around 1905. The dates vary just slightly, but we'll go with 1905. Nothing was ever heard from the two again. There were rumors, of course, that they found a giant gold mine, but roughly 2 years later, Willie and Frank's younger brother, Charlie, put together a search party. The bodies were eventually found on the riverbanks, but their heads were never found. Of course, this horrible news spread around communities back home, and people began to speculate. Was this the work of some superhuman creature? Did another prospector take the gold and their heads? Was this the legendary Naha tribe? Well, these are questions that were never answered, and obviously didn't scare off other prospectors. In fact, it's like it made them more curious about Nahanni Valley. Another prospector of note explored the valley in 1910. He was a man named Martin Jorgensen, and around 5 years later, his headless corpse was found near his burned-out cabin. In 1945, another man, who remains unnamed, was found sleeping in his sleeping bag, but with no head. Another strange death was one of a trapper named John O'Brien, who was found frozen next to his campfire, matches in hand. It was described by those who saw him that it was as if he flash froze in seconds as he was kneeling to light his fire. There are many theories on what could have happened to these men, and as far as I know, there are no concrete answers to this day. In 1962, a small plane crashed, and the pilot survived essentially unhurt. He was very well equipped with food and equipment. He had fuel and shelter from the cargo of the plane. He believed that he would be rescued quickly. He wrote in his diary, and there were entries about seeing an aircraft flying overhead but not spotting him. He was really actually not too far from his destination, but it's believed that he didn't know that. For 50 days he waited, and then his diary entries stopped. 6 months later, his plane was found, his camp and his diary were also found, but no trace of him. Here are some other strange and mysterious legends of Nahanni Valley. The few indigenous hunters who did return from the valley would tell terrifying tales of their time in this haunted place. They told stories of encountering an evil spirit whose shrieks, they said, could be heard echoing through the canyons on a windy night. Others told tales of hairy giants who lived in canyon caves and were led by a pale woman who acted as their chiefess. The mountain men would devour anyone who stumbled upon them. Then, of course, there are many legends of the Naha warriors, the unbelievable paradise, and of prehistoric monsters very much alive and well. There were stories of mastodons and woolly mammoths that were supposedly still roaming the Nahanni land. Both indigenous and English prospectors came to observe fresh tracks from prehistoric animals in the snow and also in the clay of creek beds. There are even stories of frontiersmen coming back from Nahanni with ivory tusks. Now, along with the sightings of ancient creatures, there have been many stories of other creatures stalking Nahanni Valley. In the 1960s, a group of professionals had ventured out on an expedition. They witnessed what Inuit myth has dubbed the Wahila, also known as the bear dog, an ancient relative to the modern-day wolf, closely related to a dire wolf, for all of you Game of Thrones fans out there. Some believe that the Wahila could be the suspect for the disappearances and the beheadings. Another encounter is with a creature called a Nukluk, described as a short, hairy, half-naked humanoid, clad in a loincloth and carrying a club with a long, dark beard. This creature is believed to be one of the cave-dwelling cannibalistic monsters in some of the legends heard through the valley. The description is pretty specific and really makes you wonder. So please let me know if you've ever heard of this place before. Would you go camping? Would you explore the vast Nahanni Valley? So this brings me to the end of the episode, and I really hope you guys have enjoyed it. I can't wait to check out the Caribou Hotel when it's all done, and I really hope you guys will check it out too. And maybe even if it's available, book Bessie's room on October 27th and see if she pays you a visit. Thank you again to Anne for her interview and for sending me photos, and a shout out to Jamie also for all of his amazing work on this hotel. I'll add all of their social media on the blog so you can check it out too. Like I said, the Nahanni Valley may be tempting, but it's not an easy location to get to. And you also have to have specific permissions. If you have your own stories of Nahanni Valley that you have heard, please send them to me. If you do visit the Caribou Hotel, please let them know where you heard about it. And don't forget to check out the blog so you can see photos from these stories, and especially those weird photos captured by Anne and her friend. I'd really like to know what you all think. I will have links to each location and any information you might need to check into these incredible places. Please make sure that you check out my website at realscarypodcast.ca. You can email me at realscarypodcast@gmail.com. Please be sure to follow me on Instagram and Facebook at realscarypodcast. And also, I would love it if you would hit that subscribe button and that like button on whichever platform you listen on. Please feel free to leave me a comment or rating, and you can even put a rating on Facebook if you wish. I love to hear your comments. It helps me continue to make this show and make it even better for you, the listener. Until next time, this is your friendly neighborhood host, Elise.